Garland Nixon here, and we have with us Alex Craner. We're going to talk about this Venezuela thing. I'm very interested to see what he thinks. You know, I got a lot of thoughts on it. One of them, I think, is this, you know, Trump does this kind of stuff, and then he has a press conference, and it's a big splash and all that. And generally, it doesn't go anywhere. But at any rate, I got a lot of thoughts on it, but I'm not going to badger the witness. No leading questions. Let's hear what he has to say. Alex Craner, your thoughts on this.
Well, good to join you, Garland, again, and warm greetings to all our viewers and listeners. Well, you know, Venezuela news is 2 days old. It was a big shocker. It was initially a big disappointment, but it's the news is so bizarre that I still can't make up my mind what the hell is all this about. And so over the last, I've been traveling, and I only arrived back home about 24 hours ago. And since, I've been trying to get through as much content as possible to try to maybe pick up some dots to connect. And it's next to impossible. And I even went, you know, when I don't know what to think about something, I go and I try to pay attention to the British media and their deep state actors, who many of them are quite chatty, you know, like Sir Richard Dearlove, the former MI6 chief, Tony Blair's former chief of staff, Alistair Campbell, Rory Stewart, former all kinds of everything, but definitely, you know, British establishment men, they are all at lost. They don't know what to think. They don't know what to say. I see that the media generally in the West is very negative, very hostile. And I've seen mainstream media interviews with a number of British officials, including the Prime Minister Keir Starmer himself. And so the media, the interviewers are all trying to lead them into condemning what happened. And they're all, well, we don't know. We're waiting to find out more. And so they're all declining to condemn Trump, but the media is leading. So that to me is kind of significant. And then as far as these actors like Alistair Campbell and Rory Stewart go, they are... they're not sure what to think. They are 100% sure that they hate Trump, but they don't know what to make out of the Venezuela issue. And so far, we've seen a number of angles on the Venezuela story. One of them is drugs trafficking, right? One of them is immigration issues. One of them is oil and minerals. One of them is... well, you know, freedom and democracy isn't really a thing so much anymore. But then one of them is Monroe Doctrine, you know, along with the China scare. And then there's the election interference angle. And I have to say that the minerals and oil angle almost certainly is the great attractor, meaning that there's going to be a lot of powerful people among the, you know, U.S. deep state vested interests who are going to want to take control of Venezuelan regime, because obviously if you turn that all those resources into Wall Street collateral, that's going to be, I would say, a minimum $15 to $20 trillion. Credit impulse that's going to, you know, give another business cycle of everything is awesome. Trump himself might be interested in this. But then I think in the end, the angle that I find most credible is the election interference angle, because as far as oil and minerals are concerned, Maduro was already giving everything. He was already, well, name your terms, we'll work with you. So you could have done it without this whole abduction thing. Now election interference thing is also very, very difficult to piece together, because it's a lot of allegations, testimonials, alleged intelligence agent leaks and revelations and stuff, but you can't really tell. You know, maybe the best material that we have is what was her face, that lawyer who was with Trump after the 2020 election, you know, they released the Kraken woman.
I know you're talking about, I can't remember her name, but yeah, I think everybody knows. Yes.
Yeah. Well, so she was putting together a legal file and she had a number of affidavits there. Well, affidavits are something, you know, they're not just allegations. They're documents, testimonials by persons whose identity is verified and verifiable with their names. So they're standing behind what they're saying. And so apparently from that angle, it seems that these technologies like Smartmatic software and Dominion voting systems were either partly outsourced to Venezuela or some, according to some, they were actually built in Venezuela. That's where they originate. And they were used to engineer not just elections in the United States and Venezuela, but around the world. So this was, Managed Democracy, Inc. Now, how would that end up being in Venezuela, of all places? I don't really know, but let's say that if you put yourself in the position of Chavez and Maduro and you know that you are on a collision course with the U.S., and you think that the United States is your enemy, somebody could come in there and say, we'll help you defend yourself. You know, we can take this system down from within. We'll mess with their election system. And you burrow your way into Venezuelan deep state. I think that this is a possibility. I know that apparently Serbia was involved in this as well. You know, Serbia has high quality software engineering talent and also deep liaisons with the British intelligence. And so now from there, everything is very bizarre. The way he was abducted, you know, I think it was it four helicopters?
I'm not sure. Here's the thing I'll say about this. I think it'll come out, but right now it's all speculation. You know what I mean? Right now, we really don't, there's a lot of speculation, but the truth is this. We 6 months from now, we could get the reality of it. There could be something totally different than it could have been. So right now it's so much speculation. We really don't know what happened on that night. We know that there was some bombs dropped. We know there was some people killed. We know that he ended up on a ship and headed back to New York. But what happened right now? My position is there's a lot of speculation and we really don't have the details.
Yeah, but you see, the thing that I found confusing straight from the get-go is the footage of U.S. helicopters flying low over Caracas on their way to pick up Maduro. That operation could not possibly be executed flawlessly, right? Without cooperation from people in Venezuela very close to Maduro, if not Maduro himself. No losses. No 35 Delta Force specials. And they go in there and they don't lose a single helicopter. They don't lose a single soldier. They get in, get Maduro and his wife, and then get up. You know, like getting a man and his wife, you know, getting the man in himself is complicated enough. You don't have a lot of time. You can't just go knocking on doors and, hey, where is he? You have to go straight to where he is. And then the added complication of picking up his wife. I mean, that story is so unlikely. So, you know, the speculation is that Darcy Rodriguez turned him over, the vice president, right? Maybe, but is it possible that Maduro himself made a deal and he said like, okay, I'll cooperate, but if I cooperate with you, I'll be a dead man. So I need protection. So that this is Trump administration putting Maduro into a witness protection program, because there's no regime change.
Agreed.
You know, this is Maduro regime minus Maduro.
Can I add one other thing? This is how skeptical I am. I'm such a skeptical person. Okay, I saw pictures of helicopters flying over an area that had palm trees. Do I know for sure that that's what the operation happened? He could have been on the back of a truck. You know what I mean? I mean, they could have very well had him in a vehicle and driven out, sneaking in the back of an old taxi cab, and then just showed us some pictures of some helicopters. And so we all talk about it like, well, the helicopters were flying low. We don't know for sure that that was Delta Force helicopters. We know that some bombs were dropped. We know that there was some explosions. But we have pictures of helicopters allegedly flying in over there, things that you think about it and you're like, well, does that make sense? Well, maybe it doesn't make sense, because maybe that's not what happened at all. You see what I'm saying? I'm so skeptical that I even look at the picture of the helicopters and say, maybe months down the line, we'll find out. But we've seen stuff like that months down the line. And it's like, oh, yeah, those were helicopters flying over San Juan. They just stuck the pictures in there. He was actually in a taxi cab and snuck out 3 days ago. You know what I mean? We don't know. I'm such a skeptical person.
I think that in this case, Garland, you're absolutely right to be skeptical, because this whole thing was obviously a theatrical production. There's no way that this was, you know, the way that Pentagon General presented it, this super efficient, disciplined, precision operation that was executed flawlessly, blah, blah, blah. No, give me a break. Come on. There wasn't a single bodyguard around Maduro. There was nobody to shoot at those. I mean, you know, they've been saber rattling in front of Venezuela in the Caribbean for 4 months now, the regime knew they were in danger, that they didn't set up any radars, that they couldn't identify four helicopters going in, that they didn't have some Stinger missiles. I mean, this is low flying. This is, you know, they could have had from Russians missiles that could have taken all four helicopters in a second. So the whole thing is a theatrical production. But I have to ask myself, why did they pick up his wife? What does his wife have to do with anything? So I wonder if it isn't a deal. He says, okay, I'll go. Your side of the deal would be this and this and this and that, meaning, you know, we're going to run the sham trial proceedings, and then you're going to return us back, or you're going to release us back to Venezuela or to some, you know, Isla Margarita or something like this. You will leave my government intact, so Darcy Rodriguez takes over. Check. You will not bring Maria Corina Machado, check. Trump is saying, like, no, she's not coming. So that whole, you know, Nobel Prize committee nomination of, you know, blah, 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 no, all of that, none of that adds up, you know, to make it look like it's a regime change in order to take the oil. It's for sure it's something else, and we can only guess, but Here's the deal with the Dominion system and Smartmatic and all that. After the 2020 elections, there has been a flood of testimonials from people who noticed voting irregularities. I mean, it was hard not to notice, but, you know, some people with very, very, very credible testimonies, because they were they were election monitors, they were involved with the vote counting. They saw firsthand delivery of pre-printed ballots, and on and on and on. Some people witnessed their own votes being flipped from Trump to Biden and so forth. And then there was the Dominion voting systems executives in the United States just went disappearing, right? And their offices suddenly moving. And then it turns out that the Dominion Systems office in Toronto, which is, I don't know if that's like the headquarters for North America, but they had an office in Toronto. they shared the office in Toronto with one Lord Malloch Brown, a close associate of George Soros. And then there's some credible allegations that this was a CIA operation partly outsourced to Venezuela. And if this is the case, then, and so a lot of these allegations were made, and apparently the U.S. administration took no steps to investigate them. So nothing happened at all. This all just went into the darkness and was supposed to be forgotten. But we did have a stolen election in 2020. And that couldn't have been a simple matter. And it almost certainly wasn't a home-cooked agenda by Chavez regime in Venezuela. That just doesn't, you know, seem likely. And so there's, you know, there's reason to believe that this was all linked with Western intelligence agencies, let's call it CIA, MI6, the Mossad, and that Maduro has the receipts, and that his cooperation is necessary to bring this network down. Maduro already gave the oil, the resources, the you know, he was like, come in here, do what you have to do. We're open for business. Trump said no. And then, you know, it was just a few weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago, that Maduro gave a statement on television. And he was talking about how he had a long conversation with Donald Trump. And Maduro was saying how the conversation was very cordial and respectful, and everything is good, and we're going to work this out. There's not going to be any war, and so on and so forth. And then 3 January, he's on his way to the United States, to New York. I have to notice also that when, you know, at first, like you, I didn't believe anything. I thought that the whole thing was a sham, that probably nothing even happened. But then the photograph started emerging, right? And then I think I saw a number of photographs, and within the first 24 hours, Maduro's changes his outfit like 4 or 5 times. He's like he's like first in a gray outfit, then he's in a blue outfit, then he's in something else. But then he doesn't look very despondent in these pictures. He doesn't look like somebody who's been downgraded from president of a nation to a prisoner. He's smiling in some of the pictures. And he's doing 2 thumbs up in some of the pictures.
Weird, isn't it?
And I, you know, like I thought maybe this is AI. And I kind of carefully looked at the picture because AI will make mistakes. You know, the shadows and stuff, yeah. And objects that don't belong, or, you know, everything looks perfectly, you know, like... No, you see rust in the structures behind. You see peeled paint. The shadows look about correct from, you know, from every person standing in the picture. The shadows are falling in the correct. So it looks like those pictures are genuine. And so what the hell is going on? I don't know, but it wasn't a regime change. That's for sure.
If we take it at face value, I'm not saying I'm skeptical. I'm saying I don't take anything at face. I'm so skeptical now that I like, okay, I'm going to watch it as it unfolds. And once it comes to something that I say, I'm pretty convinced of that, I'll go with that. Right. And I'll move forward. But right now I'm not convinced of a whole lot of things other than there's one guy that was getting it. Let me show you when it comes to this, the issue of elections. I was on this back in years ago. I don't know if you remember this. There was a guy named Mike Connell, right? Mike Connell was the Bush family's IT guy. He was the chief IT consultant, Karl Rove, blah, blah, blah. Where was it? Well, if you look into it, what happened with Mike Connell was there was questions about the Ohio election and vote rigging with the machines in 2004. He was then subpoenaed to come testify 2 weeks before his testimony. You know how that works. Mysteriously, his plane. Now he doesn't testify, right? Which I back then, I'm like, yeah, I know what's up with those. You know, the machines, you know what's up with these machines.
Yeah.
And so my position is this. I don't trust any election. In fact, I feel like this. In 2016, I feel like they tried to steal it then. It was just too big. You know what I mean? That like, okay, we can take 20%, you know, we can take 7.5% of the votes, but if it gets to the point of 8 or 9%, that's too much. We can't do that. You know what I mean? So I like every election, I feel like I don't trust any of these elections. You got a machine where we can't, it has proprietary software. We're not allowed to see what's in it. And if you recall, there was a guy, I interviewed him. He ran against Debbie Wasserman Schultz. You might remember him. He was a law professor. And I interviewed him. I probably still have it on here. I interviewed him when I was with Sputnik. He ran against Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And when he lost by the exact same percentage. If you looked at black voters, white voters, young voters, old voters, female voters, male, he lost by the exact same percentage. And the Georgia Tech, I think it was, one of these places did that. One of these places did a look into it. And they said the odds of that happening are far more than 1 billion to 1, so much so that it just couldn't happen. It's not possible that you would lose by the exact same percentage in every demographic. So he goes to court and the court rules, well, the machine has to give you, there was a woman, I forgot her name, a black woman in charge of all of that stuff down in Miami. You might remember her. I can't remember her name, but she was crooked as a rattlesnake. So the courts ruled you have to show the images because by law, all these machines keep, they don't have a paper ballot, but they keep the image of the ballot, right? So the court ruled by law, you got to print, you got to show this guy the images. And they, you know what they said? We destroyed the images. So he then said, well, wait a minute. That's a federal offense. Somebody has to be charged, but they wouldn't charge anybody. So they admitted that they violated federal law, destroyed the images, and they wouldn't prosecute anybody who did it. So at that point, it's like, how obvious does it get at this point?
Yeah.
Just saying, hey, like we're crooked and there's nothing you can do about it at that point. So as far as our elections, it's long been my opinion that we don't have, we have the illusion of elections every 4 years. And they screwed up every now and then. And I think they decided that Kamala Harris wasn't going to be the president. That's my opinion.
Maybe. But by the way, Garland, I just remembered the woman I was talking about. It's Sidney Powell.
Yes, that's it. That's it.
Sidney Powell. And I think it's important. It's an important name to keep in mind. She vanished. But I think there's still a lot of documents and videos on YouTube where she's explaining all of these things that happened. And I think that some of this stuff connects to Venezuela. And might be part of the reason, or maybe might be the main reason why Maduro is in New York now. And I think we won't know for a while. But I don't know where Sidney Powell is now. She's vanished and she's never resurfaced that I know of. I haven't seen her, but I wonder if she's alive. I don't know.
Hanging out with the Scripples or something, maybe.
Hanging out with the Scripples,
yeah. You know how that works. But you know, it's just like these things happen and we speculate and then we find out it was never. But here's my opinion. I don't think this thing in Venezuela is ever going to really materialize. That like, okay, we're going to get the oil and then the Wall Street's going to use it for collateral. I don't think that's ever going to materialize.
I think it's going to be extremely complicated, and they have to manage it very carefully. And so I think that leaving Darcy Rodriguez in charge, if that's your objective, is probably the right thing to do. Because the thing about Venezuela is that if you try to usurp their natural resources and turn them into a colony again, people will not have it.
Oh, they'll fight.
And the Chavista regime has been preparing for this for a very long time now, for more than 20 years. They knew this was coming. And the way that they prepared for this is that they created these extensive, I don't know what they're called, but it's like the equivalent of the
militias,
territorial defense militias.
They call it militias. Yeah, they have brown uniforms.
And these people are very fired up, and they're very well armed, and they're very prepared to wage a guerrilla warfare. So if you brought like a new regime by force, you know, like Iraq or Afghanistan, that regime wouldn't have a day of peace ever. They would destroy all of their oil rigs and everything. It just wouldn't be possible.
You wouldn't be able to move in that country. You'd get fired at everywhere. You get fired at every, yeah. And it's the yeah. worst. You know, I've been there a lot and been around there a lot. It's the worst terrain. You're always driving through mountains. And that, like, when you ride through the mountains, the towns sit up on the hills on the side of the mountains. Everywhere, some countries you go to, and the roads are always down here, and there's always towns overlooking. Everything overlooks the road. So if you're on a road, you're always in a kill zone, basically. Yeah, you're in an ambush kill zone. You can't move in that country if they don't want you to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, this would be... this would make Vietnam look like a picnic. And, you know, I think that in Colombia, the FARC militias, I think that they numbered maybe like 15, 20,000. In Venezuela, the estimated size of this insurgency would be probably around 300,000 fighters. You can't pacify that, not by force. And in the end, the only way you could have those resources is through a fair deal that people could look at and say, okay, we'll work for you, and you're going to pay us fair salaries, fair royalties, and that money gets reinvested here at home. And then you get access to those resources. I forgot to mention another thing is the medals, you know, because one Vince Lancy, a very competent commodities analyst, has posted just yesterday an article about some metals refining facility, like a zinc and other metal, like 13 different metals of strategic importance to the United States, that is going to be built, I think, somewhere like in Nashville. But among other things, it'll do zinc and copper and antimony, all of these rare earth minerals that, you know, you can find in places, but China has the world monopoly practically on refining them and producing the refined product. And so now this project is going on in the United States, and they're counting kind of on Latin American sources also to provide the resource for that refinery. And one of the investors is U.S. Department of Defense with a 40% stake in that. Not that this explains the abduction of Maduro, but it does explain that there is, you know, there is an idea of getting access to the resources. But still, you know, I think you can't have those resources past the insurgency. If you trigger the insurgency, you're going to have to make a fair deal. There's just, I don't see the way around it.
You know, and here's the thing, the press conference was bizarre. Trump started off talking about that. Then he meandered something about cities and how there was no murders anymore in DC. And then he went on to say, other countries, Colombia and Mexico, and they better be worried too, because I might get, you know. And you could see that his advisors were kind of sitting over there, like loosening up their ties, sweating, and like, would he please shut up, for God's sake, man, shut up. Like, he starts babbling, and I'm watching it, and I'm like, he's bad. I knew it was coming. He's babbling, and it's just, it ends up being bizarre. The whole thing is bizarre, because you basically kidnapped a person. And now we got to speculate on what the kidnapping was about. You know, we're speculating like, okay, one guy's kidnapped. What the hell's going on here? And they, you know, the, well, there's regime change. No, it's not regime change. You kidnap one guy. You, and it ain't the first time, because you kidnapped Hugo Chavez. You kidnapped John Bertrand Aristide. All these people are like, Trump, can you believe Trump did this? I'm like, Trump, Biden machine gunned Jovenel Moise, who was the prime minister of Haiti, even though he was a puppet. He's, if you remember when the war started, but Jovenel Moise says, you know, let's not be so hasty to condemn the Russians. And he was on the phone talking with the Russians. And he's like, I don't know about this. You know, maybe the Russians have something here. 2 weeks later, he gets machine gunned. So let's not pretend like Trump is something so bizarrely different from Biden or Bush or the rest of them. He just gives a bizarre press conference. They don't give a press conference. You know what I mean? This is the U.S. has been doing this stuff for, you know, the idea that Trump is something weird. He is, in that he runs his yap in a press conference and leaves us all saying, what the hell did he just say? But as far as actually going to another country, kidnapping somebody, murdering the leader, nah, you know, and God knows, I'm sure the Brits ain't going to have nothing to say. They're asking Keir Starmer, what do you think? Starmer's like, well, I guess probably better leave that one alone.
Yeah. They just don't know. They just don't know. Well, you know, we don't know either. Nobody knows. But this is, you know, this seems to me to be a thing that's by design. And I wrote an article a couple of months ago, I think in August, called, the title was The Education of Donald Trump. And I, because a man named Ian Burlingame, I think you know who I'm talking about, he brought to my attention the character of what's his name? His nickname was the Chin. Well, anyway, he was the head of the Genovese mob family in New York, and he was able to evade law enforcement in New York for 15 years. By pretending to be dumb, by pretending to be completely out of it. He was walking around New York in a bathrobe and a pair of slippers, muttering to himself. And so, you know, they were after the guy, but they were like, obviously it can be this guy, right?
Right.
and then, you know, this happened during Donald Trump's heyday in New York. He went down finally in the late 90s and early 2000s. I think it was in 2003 that he finally confessed that his playing dumb act was an act, that he's, you know, he was the boss of the family. And his lawyer was his defense lawyer was Roy Cohn. And Roy Cohn was one of these big lawfare assassins, the big lawyers, a dirty lawyer, who also happens to be Donald Trump's mentor. I mean, he is no longer, but he was in the early part of, during a part of Donald Trump's career, Roy Cohn, who defended this guy. I don't know why I can't come up with his name right now, but anyway, he, if people are interested, please look up on my Substack article, Education of Donald Trump. The Trump's unpredictability, his throwing up all kinds of nonsense and shit that people think like he's mad, he's gone, you know, off the rails, is an act. And obviously, everybody's guessing. I mean, honestly, I spent a few hours today watching British public officials and analysts trying to work out what the hell just happened in Venezuela. And none of them have an answer. They just don't know.
I'm with them. I'm the same way. You know, what I'm pushing back is, and you can tell, is people are coming to conclusions. Like in less than 24 hours, people said, I know what happened. This person was sold out. This. And I'm like, dude, we're 24 hours in. You know what I mean?
We don't
know. So I'm like, when I'm this skeptical about things, I'm like, I don't know. Any of these things could be true or none of them could be true. I'm going to be like, okay, let's watch what happens. And as you see, there's two ways to do it. There's to say, I think this happened, and then watch what happens to see if it supports it. Or they have to say, I don't really have a theory. Let me watch what happens and build my theory based on what drops next. And that's kind of where I am. You know, it's like I said, even when I saw the, everybody's like assuming, well, the helicopter flew over. What happens if we find out there were no helicopters? And we've had those kind of things happen before where they're like, yes, they did this, this, this. And we find out that, no, they showed some helicopters flying over, you know, Aruba or something. They had some old footage and they put a little bit of bombs or something in the back. And he was in the back of a, you know, a 1989 Corolla 2 days ago. You know, we don't know. I'm just saying, and I'm not saying any of that's true, but I think it's reasonable to be really skeptical right now of all of this stuff.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And it's even possible that he and his wife packed up nicely. And that they came to a meeting place. They were escorted to the, you know, U.S. What was it, Iwo Jima, and loaded up. And then the footage, was made later for show for the, you know, when the situation was ready to be announced to the world. Well, then you had to show some helicopters, and obviously you had to show some fireworks, and we got that, but. I'm with you. I think anything could have happened, but still, you know, there's the fact that Nicolas Maduro was abducted, or let's say
he doesn't appear to be there anymore. And Delcy Rodriguez appears to be there.
Exactly. And that there must be a reason for this. And you know, we also have to look at questions, not only what happened, but what didn't happen. They didn't kill him. You know, they could have killed him like as they've done with Muammar Gaddafi if they had such a big problem with Venezuela as they had with Libya. They could have killed Maduro. Another thing that didn't happen is regime change. So you went through all that trouble, you're saber rattling in the Caribbean for 4 months, and then you leave the same government there intact. The person who was handpicked by Maduro to be his vice president and his replacement is now in charge of Venezuela, and with Trump's approval, clearly there was a deal. So, you know, at that point, the question is, did she betray Maduro, or did they all agree, okay, I have to turn myself in, I have to go with them, you're going to take over, that's the deal, and good luck to me, and if the Americans hold their side of the deal, I'll be back home in a few years.
Yeah, and I always leave this possibility too. It could be exactly what it is. They could have snuck in, they could have nabbed them, and they could have got out. It could have been a deal. It could have been any. But I think time will tell, and we'll figure this out.
I think that last one is the least likely. Yeah. I think that one is the least likely because if it is what we're supposed to believe, this would have to go down as the most amazing, most precise, most luckiest military operation in history of military operations, not just on Earth, but in the Milky Way galaxy.
Yeah, it's weird. The whole thing is weird. The whole thing is weird. I've read part of the indictment. I haven't read it all. The indictment is preposterous. I hope they don't. I guess if they're going to go to court, they just got one of these judges, like the Assange kind of judges, that just whatever they do, rubber stamp. And I don't know, but we'll find it. Let me ask you this. The Europeans, I think the Europeans are freaked out. I think the coalition of the willings type are, here's what I think they saw. They if I'm one of those clowns, here's what I look. Holy crap, they're out of here. I look at it, I'm like, yeah, they're done with you. Trump and his people are done with Ukraine. They're finished with it. No money, no resources, no backstop, no nothing. That's my first thought if I'm one of these clowns. That this is my thing, which, to be quite frank, if they were sensible, it would be like, we better call Putin. Hey, we want a deal yesterday. How quick can we get it? What do you need? The Nazis, they're yours. Bye. If I'm them, they can't really do that because that's political suicide. But my point is, I think they look at it and they say, the Americans are finished with this project.
Yeah. Yes. Well, you see, I think that we're looking at the controlled demolition. Controlled, okay, maybe it is controlled, maybe it's not quite. We're looking at the controlled demolition of the post-World War II global order.
Yes.
Trump is on the loose, and he's clearly doing things that are illegal. He's acting in a very thuggish, gangster-like way. But that's kind of what he promised. You know, from January, the talk was post-World War II global order is finished, and they're wrecking it. And it's looking very, very ugly. But maybe there is a rhyme and reason behind it. And then another thing, you know, the reactions from the Chinese and the Russians, which is another, you know, I try to figure out what they say to see what it is. So everybody's condemning the abduction of Nicolas Maduro, but it doesn't seem very, it seems almost like a token condemnation, you know, like their heart's not in it. And then Alistair Campbell said the same thing, you know, he said, it doesn't look like they really mean it. And then Trump goes and says, like, yeah, it's Xi Jinping is not going to be a problem. It's not going to be a problem. Which either he's saying nonsense, as he does often, or they've advised the Chinese, we're going to do this for this reason. Don't worry, your shipments of oil are going to continue going as scheduled, and we will not infringe on your contracts with the Venezuelans. And then Xi Jinping said that the Venezuelan Chinese interests in Venezuela are going to be defended by law. That's kind of a strange formulation. But what does it mean? Maybe it means that those contracts are legally binding and therefore they will be fulfilled in spite of the, you know, Nicolas Maduro changing address. I don't know.
Yeah, I still wonder what, you know, the one of the big things that happened that wasn't talked about as much as it was, it flared up and dropped, and that was the Europeans trying to get this money from the Russian, you know, resources that were stored in Europe, Euroclear, and plenty of other places, not just Euroclear, and they failed. And then the Russians filed a bunch of lawsuits. So it looks like at some point the Russians are moving for whatever you do. At some point, the courts are going to rule you got to give us that stuff back, right? Yeah. And that put the Europeans in a bad situation, and they claim that they're going to do some kind of bonds and sell these bonds on the market. Who in the hell would buy those? You know, so that money thing there, I think is driving, not, I don't know that it's driving this or anything, it has anything to do with it. But as far as the Europeans, your thoughts on, because they're like, okay, we're giving however many billions to the Ukrainians, right? And then they can't get the Russian money. Then the Russians go out and file a bunch of lawsuits and say, you know what? We decided we're going after this money. We'll get it back in court. And then the Europeans are like, well, we'll sell these bonds. And the more you look at these so-called bonds they're going to sell, you're like, that's a scheme. How are they going to pull that? I don't think they can even pull that off. If they do everything and get it set up, it would take months, number one. And Ukraine doesn't have that. Number two, if they get it set up, I don't see people beating down the door to buy those bonds.
No, because the payback of those bonds depends on Ukraine winning the war and Russia losing the war. Who would buy that? You would buy that for 5 cents on the dollar, just, you know, like, okay, what the hell, maybe.
Yeah, like buying a lottery ticket. When the lottery gets up to like $1 billion, you buy one, but what the hell, I got nothing to lose.
Yeah, exactly. You wouldn't buy them because you think that there's any chance of Ukraine winning the war. I think that the Europeans have really painted themselves into a corner, and their only the only thing that they think could change their equation was if they got the United States back on board. And then, you know, the United States issued a security guarantee for Ukraine. And then they got the World War III going. And I think that their calculus there is always that, okay, we can get ourselves into a world of trouble, you know, send our troops there, get a whole bunch of our boys killed, and then we're going to go crying to Washington, D.C. and tell the Americans, oh, you know, we are traditional allies, we are you are, you know, Americans, you know, the United States is made by Germans and Irish and Poles, and we're all the same people, you can't just leave us here in trouble. Same storyline as World War I, World War II. The United States always came on board very late after false flag attacks and after a whole lot of public relations and propaganda offensive to get the American people to consent to sending their boys to a European war. But, you know, it happened twice in the last century. So these people in Brussels and in London and in Berlin think, well, we can do it again. So we have to get ourselves into a whole lot of trouble. There has to be images of European cities blown up, you know, civilians killed, Russians bayoneting babies and tearing up pregnant women and pulling out their unborn babies out, rape stories, you know, all of the stuff that they've done before. And then, you know, you saturate the American information space with those stories and imagery and everything. And then you stage a false flag attack like Lusitania, like Pearl Harbor, and which there were not
9/11.
9/11, yeah. Well, 9/11 was a false flag. Lusitania and Pearl Harbor were not, but they were provoked. You know, they orchestrated the scenario so that this event would happen.
Right.
Anyway, once the event happened, then you get the ball rolling, and then, you know, some president in the United States gets browbeat into signing the Declaration of War, and the Congress adopts it, the president signs it, and then maybe they get World War III. So I think that this is what Europeans are hoping. This is their long shot chance of snatching victory out of the jaws of defeat. But it's not going to happen while Trump is in the White House. So, you know, that's where the mindset, you know, Zelensky ran his mouth the other day saying that, you know, what do you know? Some people die and some people die in office and, you know, leaders change, situations change. It's funny, he never thinks that it's going to be him.
Yeah.
You know, he always says this thing. And also when they abducted Maduro, he was like, you see what can happen to dictators?
Yeah, we do.
Dude, your term expired almost 2 years ago.
Yeah, his ticket.
He thinks it can only happen to Putin. Oh, it's but you know his.
Well, they don't have 3 years. That problem, I think, if I'm looking at the battlefield, they don't have 3 years, and I don't think the European leaders have 3 years. That's the other part. You know, as Europe is economically coming unglued. That's the problem. They want to wait. Their game, I think, has been to wait Trump out. We'll wait 3 years. We'll get another Biden type figure in, and then off we go to, you know, we'll finally get Putin once and for all. But they don't have that kind of time. I think I may be wrong. Maybe not. It may be just the Russians fight. I've said this. If I was the Russians, I'd slow walk it. I would be in no rush. Keep sending equipment in here. Keep sending money in here. And we're going to keep blowing things up nice and slowly. As you run out of money, you run out of time, you run out of... So by the time, if you ever do want to fight me, I'm going to have blown up all your equipment in Ukraine, and you ain't even going to have nothing left to fight me with, and you'll be broke. Yeah, and your people will be infuriated at you. So whether they intend it or not, the Russians have slow-walked this thing, and I think by summer sometime, they're out of money and nowhere to get it, and it ain't coming from across the pond.
Yes, exactly. Well, that's exactly it. And I think that this was the Russian strategy because, you know, all those stories that we've been hearing in the beginning, how Russia was going to overrun Ukraine in 3 days, that never came from the Russians. The Russians never said that they were going to overrun. I think that came from one of these characters like Jack Keane or Petraeus or somebody.
Yep.
And then, you know, like they set the bar at that place, and then they say like, ha, look at these ridiculous Russians. They can't even beat far and away the strongest army in the on the continent of Europe that we've been arming for the last 8 years and training them up, and digging reinforcements in the key areas. And I think that you know, Russians are not. I think they never have been obsessed with territory. You know, like they don't look at the map and say like, well, there has to be more red on this map in before Christmas. They don't care. They count their victory in how much of the enemy's fighting potential they destroyed. And so if the Ukrainians keep sending them untrained troops with unworkable weaponry, the Russians say like, keep it going, please. Thank you very much. And they have what? 20-1 kill ratio now, maybe even more. So thank you very much. And not only that, but it's clear that a lot of those troops are NATO troops.
Yes.
Because, you know, in let's say in unofficial capacity, but maybe in some cases even in official capacity, you have a lot of troops from NATO countries and from other, you know, mercenaries from elsewhere. So, you know, Russians are quite happy to destroy all that and to leave the Europeans without arsenals, without troops, without the ability to rearm in a short run.
I bet you the Russians are glad that Nord Stream got blown up. If I was them, I would be. I bet the Russians are glad that Nord Stream got blown up. I would be. I don't want to send gas over to Europe so they can use them to, you know, reindustrialize and build bombs against me. That gives me the excuse that I need not to provide it for them. And I think that in the end, at some point, I think the Europeans will come back. The next crop of European leaders. So the Russians are going to say, all right, we want to reestablish it. And I think the Russians are going to say, oh, we don't really have any left. It's all gone east. Talk to you later.
Yeah, correct. But yeah, I think there's going to have to be a regime change. And I, you know, if you read the national security strategy of the United States, in one place, they explicitly say that the United States is going to support something to the effect that they're going to support movements that will push to change the current trajectory of the European Union. That's very interesting, because guess what? The United States is really, really good at that. You know, they've honed their skills in regime changing. And even though Trump dismantled USAID, he never dismantled the National Endowment for Democracy. And I think that they probably must have like hundreds of NGOs everywhere around Europe.
Yep.
That they can call on and organize protests, you know. And then there's also, not to be forgotten, the corruption scandal and investigations. Tens of billions of dollars got laundered out of Ukraine to Western Europe. And
didn't they lock up a former EU leader or something, a woman? Or
they locked up Francesca Mogherini, who was the former Kaya Kallas,
yes,
former commissioner for foreign affairs and national security, or something like that. That's the title. Except I think that Francesca Mogherini wasn't quite as dumb as Kaya Kallas. They're, you know.
It's hard to find someone as dumb as Kyla Karras.
Yeah, it's really hard.
It's near impossible. When you see people like her and Annalena Baerbock, von der Leyen, I would say this, she's evil but not stupid.
Yes.
Those people are so stupid, I don't even know if I'd call them evil. if you're that stupid, it's almost like you're not responsible for the level of stupidity that what come, you know what I mean? It's almost like, okay, well, I look at Kaja Kallas and I'm like, you know, what am I really going to, can I really get mad at her? She's got this vapid, vacant look in her. It's always like, you're doing something. And you're like, oh.
Somebody put together a 15-minute video on YouTube of Kaja Kallas' greatest hits. And of those 15 minutes, I think about half is her talking and the other half is the guy commenting on what she said. I promise you, I couldn't sit through the whole 15 minutes because one thing that you pick up when you listen to many of her speeches is that she always speaks like Daddy's princess. She speaks like a little girl and it becomes unbearable. It becomes extremely annoying. I couldn't sit through the whole 15 minutes. It's something quite amazing. And then the things she says, I don't even know how a person like that could get out of high school, let alone become, you know, a minister in European government. But I think that this is by design because it really takes a certain caliber of person to implement policies and agendas that don't make any sense at all. And I'll never forget January 2022 when the Germans sacked their admiral of the Navy, Kajano Schonbach, because he was in a forum with the military leaders from other countries like Indiana. And he was saying, well, you know, the low-cost solution, he said, maybe no-cost solution to this conflict between Ukraine and Russia is to take Russian security considerations into account and to treat them with respect. Boom. His career was ended that day. Immediately he got sacked. And he tried to retract his statement and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, he gave away that his IQ is way too high. We need a person who's going to come to French people and say, well, I guess you're going to all have to sacrifice your children.
Right.
No, that's the caliber. That's the person. It's the same IQ, probably more or less like Kaja Kallas, who if Macron tells him say this, he's going to say that. And
yeah, that's the kind of people we got in the EU. Well, thank you very much. Alex, where can people find you online?
People can find me on Substack. I have two publications. One of them is called iSystem Trend Compass, which is for traders and investors. It's a daily trend following newsletter covering 18 global markets. I have a personal Substack called Alex Craner's Substack. And I'm also quite active on X. My handle is @NakedHedgy.